And this is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. We're talking to our regular guests from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection today. Thank you so much for joining us. Lara Sutherland and Michelle Reinen are back with us. Lara is the Administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle is the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. We'll talk about what you should know about the latest scams and answer your questions. Do you have a consumer concern? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Michelle, I'm glad to have you back.
Well, thank you, Jill. It's great to be here.
In the studio. How exciting.
In the studio. Yay.
And Lara, it's so good to see you too.
Nice to see you, Jill. We're super happy to be in the studio. It's beautiful, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, they did a wonderful job on it. We actually have a little elbow room these days, so that's a good thing. So, you know, it's hard to believe, but it is Cybersecurity Awareness Month again. It just went so fast. What's the theme this year, Lara?
So the theme is See Yourself in Cyber. And this is this October Cybersecurity Month, it's been around since 2004, but it does sort of creep up on you. But it's an important month, and we really like folks to think about cyber in their daily life and how to keep themselves safe in digital spaces. While cybersecurity sort of seems like a complex subject to a lot of us, ultimately it's about people. And there are just a few simple steps that you can take that can help you and your organization and your businesses keep you safer from cyber threats and crime.
Tell us about those steps, Lara.
So first of all, a simple one is keeping your device, software, and operating system up to date. I know that sounds, silly and obvious, but it's actually really important. And, you know, what's happening is there are lots of these organizations that are following these glitches and these bugs and these weaknesses in their software. They know their software better than we do. And so if they're telling us, you know what, you need to update it because we've identified something for you, you should do that. And these weaknesses are discovered by software developers and help you keep your devices and your businesses safe.
I was just going to say, I know a lot of times people are very afraid to update because they think something will go wrong. And that kind of used to be the case where a new update would really mess things up. But that's not necessarily what's going on these days. At least it doesn't seem like it.
That's true. And I often hear people say they don't want to update because they don't like some of the new enhancements. They don't like new fonts or what have you. You know, look, get over it is what I have to say.
Yeah.
Because what's more important is your security. And you really need to think about cybersecurity like you think about cleaning out your house or changing your spring cleaning or changing the batteries in your smoke detectors, right? You should think about keeping up to date and doing these things in the same way that you would do other things. So that's one way you can do it, is updating your software. Another way is really making sure your passwords are strong. And there's a couple ways you can do that. This advice has changed over the years. Lots of times people get, you know, try to use the same password over and over again because they think it would be easier. That is obviously something you shouldn't do. And let me tell you why. Cyber criminals will use one password and then use little bits of information about you to break into other parts of your life. So, for instance, if you're using the same password that you use for social media and your pet walking service and your financial service, you know, your financial service and social media might be strong and protected, but your pet walking service might not be. And that's what makes you vulnerable. So what can you do? If you need something that you can remember, use a passphrase, something that's catchy that'll help you remember it. Or you can use a password manager. There's a lot of those out there. And they can help you and take the work out of it for you. There's also, in the same vein, multi-factor authentication. And a lot of places are requiring that now. For a while, that was sort of a new thing and people found it cumbersome. But now it's a daily part of our life. So if it's offered to you, we highly suggest you use it. It's a really simple way to confirm that it's really you and not somebody who's already stolen your identity, and it can keep your information safe.
And what else do we have on that list?
Oh, so lastly, you know, thinking about what phishing attempts look like. And phishing, you know, here is spelled with the PH, but it is like phishing for good information about you. And how are they doing it? A lot of us are familiar with this now, but they are phishing for your passwords, your financial information, your social security information, and they do it through spoofing email addresses, texts, phone numbers, all kinds of ways in which they're trying to get you to give them a little bit of information that they can use to put the pieces of puzzle together to steal your identity. So be wary, look for those attempts, and don't click on everything you see.
And I think you guys are co-hosting a cybersecurity summit coming up. What's that all about?
So the governor has a cybersecurity summit every year, and this year it is October 23rd through 25th at the Wilderness Resort in the Wisconsin Dells. And it is coordinated by the Wisconsin Department of Administration and the Department of Military Affairs. Great conference. This year, they have actually dedicated an entire day to women in cybersecurity. Women who are interested in going into cybersecurity or women who are already in it should really look and see if they'd be interested in attending. A great agenda. You can find it at the Wisconsin Emergency Management site. You can register there, see the agenda, and see what exciting things are going to happen.
Awesome. Is that good for just like anybody who's interested in cybersecurity for their own self, not necessarily for like a job?
Well, Women in Cybersecurity is a one-day event that's exclusively for women. That's on Sunday, October 23rd. And it's for women working in cybersecurity or considering that field. And so, yes, people who are interested in it should look at that. But the whole conference is open to the public, and you can find information about that at Wisconsin Emergency Management website.
Great. Thank you so much. And let's just go to look at some other things. Smartphone apps, Michelle, you know, they're super convenient and everybody wants you to download theirs. I had to park the other day and download an app for it and I'll never use it again. But what safety problems can that cause?
Well, so we're talking about this this month because it ties into this cybersecurity month here and making sure that you're aware of things. And you're right. Smartphone apps are definitely what everyone is using for everything, to paying for parking, yes, buying tickets to venues and events and gaining access to those, maybe tracking your athletics, your workouts. And then, of course, there's just the weather, you know,
right,
just knowing,
yeah,
what you should wear for the day type situation. But we need to make sure that we're monitoring these apps, you know, where we're getting them from, who is supplying them to us, and what information is being shared. And remember that your phone is still a phone, and so you can still just make a call, but that's not really how they're used anymore. So the data can be collected by apps and sold to third parties. Sometimes this is done illegally and without your permission, you know, from that user of the app. And there's these steps that people can take. And remember, it's not just your phone where these apps are. It could be your tablet or any other smart device that can be connecting things. So the big key is use official app stores to reduce that risk of installing harmful apps. So if you have an iPhone, go to the app store for iTunes. And if you have a different phone, an Android device, go to their app store and don't just be downloading things randomly from the internet or other stores, because they vet the people they're working with, and allow you to gain access to those apps there. And then do your research. Know what information your app will be able to access. And you often can control this within the settings or permissions of the app. So these can be changed by you, but check the app's terms and conditions to see if your data will be sold. And if so, who to? You know, how is it connected? If it's being sold to someone you already do business with through another app, well, they already have it too, but you may not like where that data is going. And then, of course, take that control. You have been given the control. Use it. Use the power. So limit the location data and permission. Consider turning off the GPS altogether when you aren't using it. Don't give apps permission to track your location unless necessary. Don't give access to your camera type situation unless you need it. If it's a scanning app, well, then your camera is going to be involved. But if it's your workout app, do you need access to your camera? But if it's your workout app and you're a biker, a jogger, a walker, you probably need the GPS in order to get your mileage. So you have to figure that out and do that evaluation. And then never store that sensitive data on your phone. And what I'm talking about here are, again, the passwords, unless it's their password, manager app that's out there. Mm-hmm. But your social security numbers, bank account information, anything that's highly personal and will give access to your financial data or your identity online where someone can steal your identity. You don't want it to store there and remember you and autofill that information. Type it in every time. Avoid connecting to free Wi-Fi. We've talked about that over the years and all the things that can happen and compromise if you're connecting there. Don't sign into apps with a social media account. Do it individually. Don't use a go-between to gain access because guess what? Now we're sharing. We're sharing, and we don't want to be doing that. And it will be collecting that data. Keep those apps up to date. That was the first thing. Your device needs to be up to date. But go through and do that. That's kind of my nightly routine. Like, check the phone. Okay, going to bed, silence. Oh, any apps need updating? Just let it set and do it because I don't have mine to auto-update. I have to do that because I want to know what's updating. If I have an app sitting out there for years and it hasn't been updated, it's probably time to remove the app because it's outdated. No one's monitoring it or what, am I even using that anymore? And that's that next tip. Delete those apps that you don't need or are not using because they're just hanging out there. And then opt out of sharing data. Again, you have the power to make that choice, and you can opt out of allowing that service provider or that third-party advertiser that might be connected from collecting that data. Now, if you opt out, that might limit also your ability to use things. Again, a choice and weighing and balancing that, but make sure that you are consciously thinking about that and making that choice there. And again, just find your routine to keep things up to date and know what you're downloading. But also think about your kids' devices too and what they're doing there. So this just isn't about your phone and what's in your hand, but what's in your household.
Right, because I think kids probably are a little less caring about who shares what. Right?
They want the latest game, or they want to be able to have what their friends have. But what is that connecting to? So make sure that is something that's discussed and evaluated and then reviewed as well.
Okay. Well, we're talking about consumer protection. If you have a question or a problem, give us a call, 800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Clara Neipert is our on-air producer today, and Trina LaSousa is our technical director. And we're talking about consumer protection with Laura Sutherland and Michelle Reinen. Laura is the administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle is the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Join in by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And our lines are open, so please give us a call. You will get right in. So we were just talking about things online, of course. And one thing that has really been in the news again recently, and this is kind of like dealing with celebrity endorsements, but it's cryptocurrency. What should we know about this form of currency? Laura, you want to take that one?
Sure. So cryptocurrency has really taken off as of recently. And you're right, there's a lot of discussion about who's promoting it and whether or not they're disclosing that they are being paid to promote it. But, promotion is what makes cryptocurrency valuable, right? The more people that are using it, the more valuable it becomes. And so that is a huge component of it. You know, all cryptocurrency obviously isn't a scam, but any time you're going to see significant promotion and significant amount of wealth affiliated with it, you're going to see scammers trying to exploit that. So knowing as much as you can about cryptocurrency before you engage is important. And, you know, one of the things that you were saying before the break is about young people and their app to share more online and their visions of privacy are just different. They evolve over the generations. This is a particular space in which young people can be really vulnerable because there is that get-rich-quick aspect to it. There are a lot of young people that are targeted because they are online a lot. They are, you know, maybe underemployed. They can work off hours, so this is the time to do investing, et cetera. And there's often some pyramid schemes around cryptocurrency. So really understanding who you're doing business with, what is the business, and whether or not this is safe. It's difficult in the cryptocurrency space because things like this happen really quickly. But let me step back a little bit and make sure everyone knows what cryptocurrency is.
Oh, that's true.
Even though it's been around for a spell now, some folks may still be scratching your head, myself included, because it is kind of an interesting new space. So it's a digital asset or a security that's considered a commodity. It's not a currency. And that's important. So it's used to store and exchange value without involving banks or government issued currencies. And that is also important. It's one of the reasons people are proponents of it, that it doesn't involve governmental institutions. And so oftentimes you see people advocating for it in certain countries where the governments are less stable. You maintain it by using a decentralized network of computers that collectively update a digital ledger, which is called a blockchain. And this records cryptocurrency ownership and transactions. So it's all done sort of ostensibly, objectively through this digital ledger, and it's not controlled by an entity or people. It's controlled by math, basically. And it's generated by computers as they contribute to the blockchain, acting as a reward for users who dedicate their devices' processing power to keeping the cryptocurrency functional. So that's what it is. And oftentimes, you hear people talking about NFTs or non-fungible tokens is what that acronym stands for. And that also utilizes a blockchain technology. And it's a way in which people can invest in cryptocurrencies. But these are not cryptocurrencies themselves. So what do we want enthusiasts to think about when they're doing this? Make sure that they are aware of, as I said at the top, who the business is that they're working with and whether or not it's a legitimate entity. Do your homework. If it looks too good to be true, it probably is. If it's urging you to get in right away and with a level of urgency, you know, you still need to step back, do your research, and figure out whether or not this is a good place to spend your money, particularly if you have limited funds like many of these young people do. Artificially inflated prices due to what are called wash trades, where a single entity is both the buyer and the seller, can be an issue. There's often times money laundering around cryptocurrency and pump and dump and pyramid schemes, like I talked about earlier, where you get more money the more people you bring in. These are all types of a fraud that cryptocurrency can exploit. Now, this isn't to say all cryptocurrency is fraudulent. By no means is it. But it can be used for that purpose because of its inability to be traced. So people need to be very, very savvy and inquisitive about these investments before they engage.
And if that happens, if they get scammed, is there any recourse at all? Because I've heard that there's nothing really, there's no trace, right?
Well, it can't, yes and no. I mean, it is infinitely more difficult to do this. And there are certainly large scale investigations into cryptocurrency fraud. And we've heard some of those in the news, but for certain, the use of cryptocurrency, its allure is it's difficult to trace, and that has good and bad implications. And when you're talking about scams and frauds, that lack of traceability and transparency makes it very difficult to track. And so, yes, once it's gone, it's very likely gone for good. So, you know, education, prevention is the way to go.
Yeah, that alone is enough to scare me away from it. So Let's take a phone call. And if you have a question, give us a call, 800-642-1234. So let's go to Prairie du Chien, and we've got Jerry online. Hey, Jerry.
Good morning. Thanks for the call or to accept my call. We believe our medical provider data has been compromised. I think it was initiated by a call to my spouse who asked if they could get her a new, they were going to send her a new Medicare card, and just if she would confirm the information. She did. Now we have a rash of telemarketing calls, including calls from the phone number of the clinic. And others that are, they always want to talk to her, and the information they start with is information that they would only know if they have access to the clinic data. So my question is, what can I be doing proactively to see if we've got other threats through Social Security or our credit cards? That's my question.
Okay, thank you, Jerry. Michelle?
Yeah, there's a few things. Jerry, first I'm going to start by saying I'm going to give you a lot of information. So call Consumer Protection or go to our website, because we have all this that we can send out to you or documented on our website. And that is 1-800-422-7128 or the website datcp.wi.gov. But things you can do to check is you're entitled to a free credit report from each of the three credit reporting agencies once per year. And so run at least one of those credit reports, those annual credit reports, if you have not done that. To secure your data, your financial information, your financial data, is to put a security freeze on your credit report if you don't already have that in place. So certainly that's the financial side. Social Security, you can request and go online and get an annual statement from the Social Security Administration, so you can see what activity is happening with that, like what jobs you've had, and you can see if someone else is using your Social Security number and there's extra earnings there that isn't work you've done under your Social Security number. And then you can also be sure you examine and look at your medical statement of benefits every time they come and make sure that those are services that you've actually received from your medical providers. So you can reach out to your insurance provider and your clinic as well directly just to inquire and let them know of your concern that you think your data has been compromised, to see what security measures they have in place to secure that data, maybe in a different way, or maybe change an account number that you have on file with them. I mean, your insurance number is still going to be that, but if there's a different way that they can secure your records and monitor them so others aren't getting services underneath your information, they may be able to do a flag. So that is another step that you can take. And, you know, if you're concerned about your credit card or your bank account numbers, flag your credit card company and your bank account as well to be sure you think you let them know there's a compromise, or you feel there's a compromise, and they can put extra security behind that information as well to keep that secure from others manipulating or using that data. So lots of steps there for everyone and you to take. But again, just call Consumer Protection, and we have these things documented in different brochures with all the contact information, you know, for the putting a security freeze on, getting your annual credit report, and contacting Social Security and things.
Good luck, Jerry. And again, for those who maybe didn't get the number. It is 800-422-7128. And Laura, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
I do. And Jerry, thanks for calling and great information from Michelle. So it is Medicare enrollment begins on October 15th, and that is why we're seeing these scams. So what Jerry went through and his wife went through is just very, very rampant right now. People call up and say, oh, it's Medicare enrollment. Just want to verify your information. That is super important that people ignore those calls. That is, you're going to see a lot of them right now. And the reason they're compelling is because it is enrollment period. And maybe they are, maybe someone is calling you to see if everything is okay. They're not calling you. You need to call them. So if somebody calls you and says that, hang up and call 1-800-MEDICARE to learn about the specific plans that you need to be thinking about right now. But don't take any of those unsolicited calls. And I'm sorry that happened to you, Jerry, and know that it's happened to a lot of people. Scammers are very sophisticated, and they use these enrollment periods to take advantage of people. So thanks very much for calling and sharing your story.
Yeah, very important information, especially this time of year. And let's go back to the phones. We've got Judy and Madison with a question for us. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I'm not sure if this is an appropriate call, but we have been having a great deal of problems with one of the local appliance stores in Madison. We bought last fall a refrigerator, and about 4 months later, we started having problems with it. So we called them. They called, I'll say, Samsung, who was, I guess I can say that part of it. And they sent someone out and said it was an insulation problem. Well, it really wasn't an insulation problem. But so the appliance people and the Samsung people can't get things straight. But we're caught in the middle of this,
okay.
And we're getting no information, really, from the appliance store here.
Okay, thanks, Judy. What do you think she should do?
Well, it sounds complicated, and I suggest that you call our 1-800 number and see if someone can help you. You might have a warranty that we can help you utilize, or just having that third party help you navigate this situation. It's hard to know whether or not we have jurisdiction, but I'm certain that someone at the end of that line can talk to you, get all the facts that they need to know, and be of some help. So that number is 1-800-422-7128, and I'm sure they can get you the information you need.
Good luck, Judy. That's never fun when you're between the person who sold it and the manufacturer. That happens a lot, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A listener called but couldn't stay with us. He has some questions about food. When he's buying eggs, it doesn't seem like the grade A large eggs are the sizes that they should be, and they're all different sizes. Has something changed? He's also noticed that they're cutting corners with butter in packages. Not quite sure what he means by that, but let's take the eggs first. Michelle, are you the food expert here?
Well, I am not. But the beauty is we are at the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And while this is generally a consumer protection issue, it's with our Division of Food and Recreational Safety. And same with the butter. So unless it's a declaration of weight issue, then it could be our weights and measures. But we don't really know what the butter is here. So, go to our website, datcp.wi.gov. And under services, you'll find, the topic of food, and you'll find contact information for Division of Food and Recreational Safety. If you don't want to go to the website and take a look around there, certainly if you call our Consumer Protection Hotline, they'll transfer you as well to the other division, and that is 1-800-422-7128. And they can tell you and provide you the regulations behind the eggs and the grading and how that happens and what's that's looked at there. But I do know eggs have to be put in a cart in a particular way, but that's it.
Okay.
that's what I got.
Well, that makes sense. They only fit one way, Michelle. Well, I've noticed because I get like the what is it called? Green...
Free range.
Thank you. Free range and organic. And I've noticed that those eggs and those cartons are definitely different sizes. Mm-hmm. So I think it maybe has something to do with that, but I could be completely wrong. So please call that number so that you can get the experts. It's very interesting. And if you've got a question for us, give us a call, 800-642-1234. And we've got another email from Lynn this time. She's wondering if there's a list of what to do to protect her cell phone and laptop from hacks. Do you have some kind of brochure or something that you could give to her?
Boy, I can't think of one that's specific about hacks to a cell phone. I know we've got little tips and different press releases here and there, but that's a great idea.
Yes. I'm writing it down.
Okay. Well, there will be one. So, Lynn, just watch. We'll have, maybe you guys can tell us next time we're here if you've got something ready. But yeah, that is a great idea. And Linda emailed us a question too. She has unwanted advertising, like loan approvals in her email that she has not been in contact with for such services. And Linda has blocked the organizations, but without success. So every day she spends unnecessary amount of time deleting these ads. Is there anything that she can do? I think we've all been there, Michelle.
We have.
Yeah.
So one thing to do is just set your email to junk particular things upon receipt. If it's a company you've done business with and you're confident the email's coming from that company, but you're just done interacting with them, you can unsubscribe. But there's always a concern that if you're not certain where this is coming from and how you're receiving it, you don't want to click anything in it. So just program your email to automatically junk upon receipt and then go in and trash your junk every so often to get rid of those things. As it relates to U.S. mail, I mean, there are opt-out services there that you can do for credit card, advance credit card offers that you can do opt-out pre-screen. You can go there to get that. You can go to the Direct Marketing Association to reduce junk mail and get on that list. But as far as email, the best thing that we've seen is to just set things to junk and get rid of them.
And a lot has to do with the email provider that you're using too, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
There are also services, which I enrolled in at one point, where you pay a fee, so it can be like $1.99 a month, and it will go through your email. And that actually, for me, it made an inordinate amount of difference, and particularly like in a political season or and one of the things that I find is that if you do order something, then you haven't properly said, I don't want newsletters, or you have and they aren't listening to you and they sold your information illegally, that's when you sort of get to a deluge. So it can be really useful to just spend a little money. If you're spending a lot of time, maybe $1.99 a month is worth more than your time
right.
deleting all the emails.
Yeah, for sure. I've had pretty good luck with the unsubscribe with companies who I've been dealing with. So that usually does work. But yeah, good luck with that one. So let's talk a little bit more about Facebook. We were talking about increasing in related to phishing that we were talking about before, phishing scams. I know it seems like a lot of my friends have been sending me friends requests that I'm already friends with. So how does the scam work and what's the whole point of it, Michelle?
Yeah, so Facebook, it's the most popular social media site probably in the world and has this massive user database. And of course, it's going to be a hacker and a scammer's dream to be able to impersonate it. So there is this newest scam, and let me describe how this one's working. So the scammer pretends to be a customer service representative from Facebook, or they're even impersonating the automatic systems from Facebook.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And they claim that user's account has been hacked, stolen, or disabled. So one of these three scenarios. And then they are asking you to click a link to recover the account. So standard phishing scheme right there. But there, the link that it directs you to this web page, and it appears incredibly similar to Facebook. It would be hard to decipher between the two. And really, that fake website that's representing to look like Facebook just is there to steal your user information. So these phishing attempts can come through Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, private messages, or through text messages or emails. We've also seen it in other forms that the Facebook Marketplace, Facebook groups, and even through friends' compromised accounts, what you've experienced, yeah. Jill. So there you need to always confirm with your friend. You know, have you emailed me separate? Go back to how you normally communicate with them. Send them a text if you got an email, or go into your own email and direct something there. But if the email's hacked, then the scammer's getting that and going to confirm.
Right, right.
So you have to be cautious there. But know that Facebook will never directly contact you via text or private message. So that's going to be something. And you never want to click those links to fulfill requests, verify information, you know, get your account again. If you're ever concerned, log into Facebook as you normally would. Change your password so no one else can access it, regain that. You can also contact Facebook directly if you think that you've been hacked or if your account's been stolen to seek help. And that's at facebook.com/hacked is where you're going to want to go there. But again, try and use a secure device and try and secure and change that password. You know, this isn't the first huge phishing attack that we've seen through things. We see it often with Amazon, PayPal, Instagram. We saw one. So we talk about it during the holidays about the shipping schemes and scams that are out there, all asking you to verify your information when really, if you're verifying, you're compromising your information by giving it to these scammers. So know that you should just disregard those emails that ask for verification, even if it's from your bank. You need to communicate another way and not through that direct email there.
Great. It's very, very important, especially at this time of the year. Back with us today from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protections, Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, are Michelle Reinen, the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor, and Laura Sutherland, the Administrator for the Department. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I am Jill Najoe on Garden Talk Tomorrow. Mark Dwyer is back with us to talk about ornamental grasses and conifers for winter interest. That's Friday starting at 11 on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking about consumer protection and other issues. And just to kind of catch up, we had that listener who called in about the eggs not being the same size. And of course, we had a very smart listener, which all our listeners are, but they called in that said that if when you buy, you can just check on the carton, and if it says ungraded, that means there'll be different sizes. So good to know. That's wonderful. Thank you, listener. I wish you left your name so we could thank you, but thank you so much. And let's go back to the phones. We are actually have full phones right now. So Gary in Dunn County, what is your question?
Yes, thank you. As we move towards digital currency, I think of the lack of safety mechanisms to back that. And, you know, and going away from paper money, I was curious about, you know, how safe can we be trusting digital currency when your money can disappear with the stroke of a key on a keypad? And that was my question. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Okay. Laura, you want to... Michelle?
Yes, I'll take a So he's absolutely right. This currency is not backed by a central authority like the FDIC. And that's obviously by design. But what that means for us without FDIC backing is that your money can be gone if it disappears. So, you know, I think there are a lot smarter people out there writing about this than I am. But certainly the objectivity and the transparency of how digital currencies work online is supposed to be a security mechanism. In other words, you can see the blockchain. You can see how the money is moving. And so there is that level of transparency. And it is very secure because it is, in some instance, it is backed. It's through this objective mechanism that it can transfer. It is supposed to be protected from human influence, right? Which is where we often see fraud and scams. And I will also say that you're seeing more and more governments getting engaged in this space, looking for ways that we can, while maybe not be backed by the FDIC, have some kind of safety nets in place and some kinds of regulation, right? I mean, that is where government can be instrumental in making sure there are consumer protections in place. And certainly that conversation is evolving as more and more people turn to digital currency. I don't think anyone would say we're there yet. But that is certainly a space that is developing, and we'll be keeping an eye on and looking for ways to understand how our department may get involved in that regulation someday, or other parts of the department. The state, rather.
Okay. Thank you, Gary, for bringing that up. Next, we have Randy in Preston, Minnesota. Hi, Randy. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I'm just kind of aggravated by the number of calls that I get that have phone numbers. And one of the things that they've done recently is make it look like it's a local call. And it's a scam. And it's, you know, some guy who says his name is Gregory, but he can hardly pronounce it, and I'm sure couldn't spell it. And what I've done is when I call those phone numbers back, often they're not a connected phone number, or it's busy. And my question is, why can't, given all the technology and all the advancement that we can do, and we can send, you know, rockets to asteroids and hit them from, you know, light years away, we can't figure out how to stop people from latching on to a number and using it as their number?
Yeah, we all get those, and it's very irritating. So what's going on with that, Michelle?
Yeah, what Randy is describing there is spoofing. It's using a device to misrepresent on the caller ID the phone number. And so certainly when it looks like a local number, it's called neighbor spoofing, to entice you to answer the phone because you don't think it's an international call or someone trying to scam you. It's your local hardware store with a great deal. No, I don't know. But it, you know, misrepresenting the caller ID is an issue. It is a violation of making phone calls. But knowing then who is behind that call, is Randy experience when he dials numbers back, then is they're not there. So I think now 2019, in the winter of 2019, there was legislation passed to require phone providers to enact the TRACED Act, if you will, and this is call authentication and verification protocols. Depending upon if you have a smart device or, you know, a smartphone as your cell phone provider, or if you have a landline, this implementation may be at a different stage, as well as states' attorney generals are working with the Federal Communications Commission, as our department is as well, and the Federal Trade Commission, to help go after these and track these individuals with these service providers to minimize. So we have seen some real reductions, but this ebbs and flows and spikes and you know, valleys type situations. So it's important to file complaints, to let us know what activity you're seeing and what information. We really encourage consumers to not engage, hang up if they answer, don't answer if you can, don't call back type situation. I'm glad that those were dead end numbers that Randy reached instead of someone trying to then engage him in any way with that call. But there is lots of work being done. Understand your frustration and why we can get rockets to the moon. But this, every time there's an advancement in technology, so is the scammer advancing their deceit, and they're using that same technology to be deceitful in this way.
Right. And there's not thousands of people trying to stop that rocket from hitting that asteroid. So you got to look at it that way, too. But it is frustrating, Randy. We hear you for sure. Let's go next to Mike in Oshkosh. Hi, Mike.
I have a question about a nonprofit organization. I had set up a monthly donation to a nonprofit a while back.
Mike, you just faded out there. So you set up a reoccurring donation and you want to cancel. Is that correct?
Right. And when I could not find anywhere on the organization's website how to cancel that donation. They're certainly ready to take more money. And also, I called their main line. And I got an answering service that said that someone would return my call and deal with my request. Shouldn't it be a little easier than that to stop my monthly donation?
Well, what do you think, Laura?
Well, so you're talking about charitable regulation, which is the Department of Financial Institutions. So I can't think of off the top of my head a regulation that would speak to what your question and your observation. Yes, it's my answer as a consumer that it should be easier.
Yeah.
But I'm not at all surprised that it's harder to cancel than it is to sign up and give money. However, if they are not responding, you certainly could lodge a complaint with the Department of Financial Institutions and have them address that. They should be registered with DFI, and you could check and see if they're soliciting here in the state of Wisconsin. You can check and see if there's been any complaints against this entity. But I am not familiar with any mandated rules about ease of being able to unenroll. I would imagine that there's a time frame in which they need to respond to you. But how they do it is probably not mandated by the state, is my guess. But you could look at DFI's website for more information and certainly file a complaint if you're having concerns or not able to discontinue your donations.
Would Mike be able to contact his financial institution? Would they be able to stop those payments?
Yes, you could certainly. So the way that would work is you would put an email in saying, I want you to discontinue it. And then you would call I assume it's a credit card, and discontinue. You would file a report and say, I'm objecting to this charge, at which point they would contact the business, and the business would have to in this instance, the nonprofit, they would have to, put forth why they're continuing to charge you. And by that point, they have an email, and I would imagine that they would say, okay, well, we shouldn't be charging you. But that's a kind of a clumsy way to have to do it, but certainly a surefire way if all else fails.
Okay, good luck, Mike. Do you have a question for us? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. Let's get to Susie in Stevens Point before we get to the news. Hi, Susie.
Hi, thanks for taking this comment, actually, and I'm going to have to listen to your comments off the air. It's about internet commerce, and I'll try to keep the scenario short here. We had a major car accident and needed a replacement car. Found the perfect car at a car dealership in Madison, Wild Honda, actually. We're from central Wisconsin, making the drive to get a replacement car. We liked the car, we bought the car, we signed for the financing, but they wouldn't wait for the insurance check. And on the way home, I discovered that the same vehicle was listed at their website for $1,500 less than what they charged us at the dealership. And I called when we got home, I called, I confirmed everything again, and I said, you must be some mistake. This is the vehicle that was online, and this is what you charged us. I had not shopped online prior to going to pick up the car. And that dealership would not back away from the financial agreement that we made under duress when we were in at their facility. Very disappointed. I pursued it with DATCAP. I pursued it with WDFI. And the summative was it falls into some sort of a crease where it's not false advertising if it's advertised on the Internet. So word to the wise today for everyone, if you're making a major purchase, please check where you're shopping to see if they have Internet specials, because obviously they are not obligated to honor that price when you're in person in the business.
Oh, Susie, thank you for sharing that with us. That has got to be so frustrating. Here she's in an accident, and yeah, and this happens. So what advice do you have for her? If I mean, she's not asking for any. This has been resolved, but we've got like, you know, 45 minutes or 45 seconds, or we could, yeah, you can address this after we come back, too.
Well, let me just say this, Susie. Thank you for calling DATCAP. I'm going to try to find your complaint because I'm not entirely sure I understand how it ended. I will say false advertising on the Internet is actionable, so that might be slightly... you know, if someone lies to you on the Internet, we have jurisdiction there and would try to address it. So I will look for that complaint. If you want to call back and leave your number or your name, we'll follow back up with you. But I have some sleuthing to do when I get back to the office.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Susie. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. And we'll be back with more consumer info right after this break for the news. This is the Larry Mueller Show. Thanks for spending some of your day with us here on the Ideas Network. I'm Jill Nadeau. I am not Larry Mueller. We're talking about consumer issues with our guest from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection today. Laura Sutherland is the administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle Reinen is Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Do you need advice on how to handle a consumer problem, or do you think you maybe have been scammed? Give us a call. 800-642-1234. We do have open lines, or you can send us an email, and that address is ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to the phone. We've had Mary from South Range online for a bit. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
What can we help you with today?
I initiated contact with the IRS to fill an application for an identity protection personal ID number. I need to know if the response and things are legit or somehow I got caught up in a scam. I filed it. I got a letter back saying we tried to reach you, but we couldn't, so please call this number and talk to this person. But only call between 3:30 p.m. and 2 a.m. Eastern Time. I tried to call, never get an answer. I get another letter a couple of weeks later saying, we again tried to reach you, but couldn't reach you. Is this just their lack of adequate staffing, or am I caught up somehow and I should just drop the whole thing and forget about getting a personal protection ID number for my tax returns?
Yeah, so this the letters seem a little peculiar, given the time frames that they want you to make contact. The IRS has numbers on each letter they send, like a form letter number, if you will, and you can verify on their website that your form number matches the letters that exist with them. They do that for transparency and to minimize that scam type situation. And you can verify employees and contact information as well on their website, so it's being directed the right place. But in all honesty, given that those identity theft protection numbers are very important for people filing taxes, I do suggest you reach out to Consumer Protection So our staff can connect with the connections that we have with the IRS to make them aware of the situation and that someone could potentially be impersonating them with these letters, because their fraud department's going to want to know about that, and also then help connect you so you can get a legitimate PIN number there to protect your tax filings as well. So our identity theft assistance team can try and help bridge and make those connections directly there. 1-800-422-7128, and just let them know that you want to talk to somebody in the identity theft assistance team so they can help make connections and things.
And if you're driving or you can't write that number down, we do have the link on our website too. So if you just go to WPR.org/Larry and look for this particular show, you'll see that there's a link underneath the description. So you can go directly there and it has their numbers, the basic information. So that should help. So good luck, Mary, with that, because that is a pretty important thing to get. Do you recommend that they get that number?
They've really increased awareness of this and the offering of that as one of their steps to help prevent fraud and identity theft when filing taxes. So I know that the Department of Revenue, the state revenue, and then the federal Internal Revenue Service, IRS, have both pushed and ramped up their protections there.
Okay, good to know. And let's go to Lynn in Madison. She has some information about that car that we talked about right before the break. Go ahead, Lynn.
Yes, I just wanted to say that I had a similar thing happen at Wild in Sarasota, Florida. Last fall, the cars were at a premium to get, so I signed a contract, got the car, and then I just happened to look at their website. So it was about the same amount less as she was talking about. So I called them, and what they told me was that Honda required them to do liners in the car and mud guards. And I wasn't really satisfied with that, but I just let it go. But that sounds like it's a policy of Wild or Honda. I don't know which one.
So I think one of the challenging things about car sales is there's a lot of dueling jurisdiction. There's the Department of Transportation, there's the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And in the instance of the first caller, there was DFI because there was an insurance component to it. So there are different spaces in which we all have jurisdiction. I will say, and I said this already, we do have jurisdiction over false advertising online. And I want to make sure that's clear. What wasn't clear to us from the caller earlier was whether or not it was false advertising, and that's why we're hoping we can talk to her and review the facts, because there can be instances when there is a price online that is dissimilar to the price in a brick-and-mortar sale, and that's, you know, for obvious reasons. You know, there may be different franchisees, there may be costs associated to having it shipped to a brick and mortar versus selling it from an online venue. Amazon is a perfect example of how they have different prices than online stores. So it's not, unfortunately, it's not super cut and dry as often these situations are. And hopefully she'll give us a call back and we can help her with that.
Okay, and thanks for the info, Lynn. We appreciate that. If you've got a question or a comment, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Colt in Colgate. Hi, Colt. What can we help you with?
Hi there. I just had a call from my a gas delivery company in northern Wisconsin, and they informed me that I'm going to be charged $212 for not using the natural resources to the full capacity. And I said, what is that? And she said, well, because you haven't used enough gas in the last 2 years, we're charging you that fee. And I said, well, how can you justify that? It's like parking your vehicle and Standard Oil charging you for not driving your car. And I said, I understand the rental fee for the tank, which is $40 a year, but to charge me $211 for not using my gas, how can you justify that? And she says, well, that's in our master contract, and you're not using your natural resources to the full capacity. What can I do about that?
Oh, Colt, I had the same thing happen to me up north. So it wasn't that much, though. But, yeah, I paid it, but yeah, it doesn't seem right. Michelle, have you heard of this?
Well, I did hear the words master contract in that description, and you know, that's when I think I got a little deflated for you, Colt. But I mean, if there is a term or condition in the contract that you have agreed to, and maybe it's a non-usage fee, and they put a period of time and they're following through with that, then it probably is your obligation to have to pay that. And that's where, you know, we really encourage people to read and understand all the terms and conditions in a contract. And if you don't like one, highlight it, bring it out, or whatever that may be. And that goes to, let's just say, inactivity fees on a gift card. I mean, there's still a cost to maintaining those gift cards on the books for different stores, and it's disclosed so people know when those kick in after a period of time if they exist on gift cards. So if you have a contract that doesn't have that term and condition in it, if your copy doesn't reflect that and they're charging you, then I would encourage you to file a complaint with Consumer Protection, because now they're charging you a fee that you haven't agreed to or disclosed to you. But if it's there, then it's your obligation to pay that.
Yeah, and that's high. Like I said, I can't remember what mine was, but I think it was only like $75 or something, because it is a cabin and it is not used, but they still have to maintain it, and mm-hmm. we're still using their tank and everything, but it does seem high. So good luck, Colt. Yeah. You can always shop around, I suppose. I mean, there might be some competitors that don't, but who knows? Let's go to an email. We've got Amy from Milwaukee. Her son is currently looking for an apartment in Arizona, but he lives here in Wisconsin right now. And a lot of the applications ask for social security number and a driver's license so they can do his credit check. And Amy's a little leery because he has to give out this information to so many different places. Is that normal? Is the status quo? Should he be doing this? The applications have all been from apartment complexes, not private individuals. And he does have a freeze on his credit that he lifts when they are checking for this credit rating. So what do you think?
I think that unfortunately it is a standard practice, and I appreciate the call and I appreciate the caution. And what that means is that if someone is asking you for that information, you should absolutely verify that it's a real entity, that you're engaging with someone that actually exists or an entity that actually exists before giving that. I recently had a similar issue with Airbnb. I was surprised at them wanting some personal identifying information, and because I wasn't accustomed to that. And I emailed Airbnb. I asked them if this was inappropriate, if there were any scams against the particular entity. So just doing your homework, making sure that the rental agreement. So let me just back up and say there are lots of scams out there where, especially if you're renting from a state away and you can't go see the brick and mortar place that you're going to live, there are scammers that will take a picture of a rental agreement or a rental space or a house, and they'll put it online saying they're going to rent it, and they don't actually have ownership of it. And so you enter into this rental agreement, you send off all your PI, personal identifying information, you send off your money, and then you go drive to move in a couple months later and you knock on the door and Mr. and Mrs. Jones are saying, this is my house and why are you here? So
nightmare.
In any event, real nightmare. So good for you for doing your homework first. But yes, it is standard practice for entities to ask for your PII, your personal identifying information, so they can do a credit check.
Okay. And thanks for that email, Amy. Before we take any more calls, let's talk about the latest on the public service loan forgiveness. I think something new just popped up on that today. What's going on with that right now? It's confusing.
Yes, it is confusing, but let me say information is makes you powerful. So we want people to know that they can navigate the space, they can figure it out and take ownership of these loans. I mean, I think one of the things that is challenging for young people is it does seem daunting, and so they out of sight, out of mind, and that's the last thing you want to do. You want to engage and figure it out, and there's a lot of resources out there to help you. So that's the other good news. And let me start out actually with one resource. If you hear nothing else, there is a website, a student loan hotline that is set up here in Wisconsin for Wisconsin consumers. And, I was about to say it, but it's not in these notes. Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
All right. Well, I'll look it up in a minute, or maybe Michelle can find it. We'll get that number to you, but it's a 800 number. It's free. It's open Monday to Friday, 8 to 5, and experts that can help you. But beyond that, on August 24th, several federal interventions regarding student loan debt were announced. The pause for federal student loan repayment has been extended to December 31st, 2022. So that means on January 1st, 2023, folks are going to have to start paying back loans that have been in forbearance. And that what that also means is a lot of folks who have never paid loans are going to have to start incorporating that into their budget, because some people out there took loans out during the forbearance period. So this will be the first time they're paying. But never fear, we'll figure it out. We'll help you navigate this. There's some really good relief for folks who are doing public service. And by public service, I mean federal or state government work, working for a tribal institution, local government, nonprofits, the military. All of those constitute public service. If you're in them for 10 or more consecutive or non-consecutive years, you can chalk that up to the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program and not have to pay your loans after 10 years. Borrowers who've had made partial or late or no payments can still receive credit for those months. That's something the administration has changed. And those who have not yet served 10 years can more easily get credit for eventual forgiveness, even if they've previously told they had the wrong loan type. So there's been changes to the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program that makes it easier. Some payments that didn't used to count now count. So lots of great information. You can find this information out at the pslf.gov website, and they will have all that kind of information that you need to know. What you should take away from this conversation is that there's a deadline on October 31st. You need to sign up for the waiver by the end of this month. So be sure to do that. So if you have made payments in the past, they're going to qualify going forward. And then the last thing I'll say is the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection is partnering with the Department of Financial Institutions to do a workshop on October 18th. And the registration for that is at our website, and it's also at DFI's website. It's Tuesday, October 18th from 11 to 12. And at this website, we're going to talk about the Public Student Loan Forgiveness Program. We're going to talk about other ways in which your loans could be forgiven. We're going to talk about the repayment plans that are out there. And we're going to talk about a tool called Savvy that is available for free for a year for Wisconsin consumers that can help you navigate all of this stuff. So come to that website, come to that webinar and learn about this. It's free, and it's really important that you go to sources of information you trust, like the ones I just listed, and figure out how to get your loans paid back.
Okay. I found a number. I don't know if this is correct or not, so I don't know if I should give it, but it's from the PSLF question or FAQ page, 855-265-4038. So you can try, see what happens. Don't give out any personal information, right? let's go to back to the phones. We've got Lee in Beaver Dam with a question. Hi, Lee.
Hi there.
What can we help
you
with?
Hear me?
Yep. What can we help you with?
I ordered an antenna online. It took them so long to send it. I tried to cancel it long before it got there. When it did get there, I wrote refused on it, put it into the building mailbox, which is a lockbox, and they're claiming they don't have the antenna.
Okay, so you're wondering what your recourse is?
Well, I filed a complaint with you guys. It was never solved.
Huh. Well, what I would suggest, Lee, I'm not familiar with that complaint, given the number that we get on an annual basis, is I would go ahead and call the individual that's handling your complaint from the letters that you would have received and inquire about the status and what's happened. But it from the what I heard is that you ordered something online and it took a long time to be delivered. I'm not sure if you formally canceled the order in that period of time with the company and got confirmation of that cancellation or not. So if you didn't go, if you received the product and didn't go through then their return policy or their procedure for returning an item, if you don't have any documentation or tracking that they received it, you may be responsible for it because they can show that they delivered it. So you might want to, you know, see what records you have about, you know, having canceled it in that sort. But just writing refused on something doesn't really allow you to track it. It doesn't let the company know that you're returning it. And that can be an issue there.
Okay, thank you, Lee. And Laura, you said you have...
Oh, I have the student loan hotline.
Oh, we got the right one. Okay, go.
Yes. So it's the Wisconsin Student Loan Debt Hotline, and the number is 833-589-0750. And it's Monday to Friday, 8 to 4:30. It's free. It's confidential. It's expert. I really encourage people to use that for information about their student loans.
Okay, great. Thank you for looking that up for us. Obviously, I had the wrong one, but I think that might be a national thing.
Yes.
So
yeah.
It makes more sense to call the state if you can. So, I've got maybe two or three more minutes. Is there something else that you guys wanted to share with us that we didn't get to today?
Well, I think one thing that we can just talk about, and it applies to homeowners, that we've seen circulating is fake home and real estate offers. It's not uncommon to see offers or solicitations to buy your home or to help you, offers to purchase your home so they can sell it. Sometimes these are for cash. You'll see them in your mailbox, voicemail, text messages, maybe a door-to-door solicitation, email boxes. You could see flyers on telephone poles. Those still exist.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they
and,
do.
Or yard, roadside, you know.
We'll buy your home, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, some are legitimate. This is a business for some people, and it's legitimate. But there's a lot of impersonators out there and scammers that are going to do this. So if you own a home and you're thinking about selling it, we really want you to do your research. Use a trusted, authentic, reliable real estate company if you want assistance and aren't going to be just selling it yourself. Thoroughly research any company that offers to buy your home. Do they have a license? Are they legitimate? Can they sell a home or buy a home in our state? And get an estimate for the home's value from at least one unbiased third party if you're doing this all on your own. Because what we've seen from the scammers is that they will often offer to buy the home at a price above your remaining mortgage, but it could be significantly less than the actual value of the home. And they might get you into a signed restrictive contract that then prevents you from selling your home with anyone else but their company. So that can really limit you and put you in a box. But signs of these scammers besides these restrictive contracts are avoiding meetings, not wanting to meet with you, not wanting to give you any details. They offer very little information and they're evasive with your questions. They don't answer them. But yet they demand that you take action right away. They pressure you. And another good sign is that they're overseas, you know, like
right.
They're just not even around
yeah.
here. So
yeah.
try and avoid these things mm-hmm. if you see them and you're in that position. But that's something that's circulating.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And thank you for being here in the studio. It was nice seeing you. We've been talking with our guests from the Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protections, Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle Reinen is the Executive Policy Initiatives Advisor and Laura Sutherland is the Administrator for the Department. Join us again tomorrow when we talk about adding ornamental grasses and conifers to your garden. I'm Jill Nadeau, in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. Stay well.